From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Nguyen announcing show number 565, Making Work Visible, with guest Dominica De Grandis. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. It's the new year, the first show of 2018, and I have a very special guest with me. My guest today is Dominica De Grandis, who's the foremost expert in Kanban flow within the IT industry today. Her work has shown working IT teams how to effectively improve workflow and optimize throughput to produce the best results throughout the value stream. Her passion involves the use of visual cues and transparency across teams and organizations to reveal mutually critical information. As Director of Digital Transformation at TaskTop, Dominica combines experience, practice, and theory to help teams level up their capability. She blogs at ddegrandis.com and tweets at Dominica D. Welcome, ma'am.
Thank you, Richard. Happy to be here.
And I think we've bumped into each other at Gene Kim's show, at the DevOps show, but I've never had you on Run As before. Really excited to have you talking to us.
Thank you. Yeah, the show was fantastic in San Francisco. I had a great time.
Tremendous amount of energy. I went to the London show and knocked out a whole bunch of interviews there. It's really fun to have them face-to-face in person, but I appreciate you doing this the Skype way too. And I'm all over the book, Making Work Visible, because I think it's one of those subtle things that, especially in IT, we just miss, that people don't understand what we do with our days.
So much of it is invisible. It's just really busy work for the most part, because everybody's in so many meetings all day.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then, you know, by the time they get to do their real work, it's after the kids go to bed at night. So we see how busy people are, but we don't often really see the work that they're doing. It's in their heads. It's in their computers.
And Kanban, for me, the Kanban board is a great example of visualizing work, but I tend to see that on the development side rather than the operations side. Does it work for both?
Absolutely. It's funny. I hear two themes. Some people will say, oh, Kanban, it doesn't really work for dev because we're doing Scrum and it's just for ops. And then I hear, well, we see it on the development side, but we don't see it on the upside.
I love it.
And I think it can work quite well for both. A lot of development teams seem to be doing the kind of Scrum bond thing because they're very embedded with Scrum, but they see the benefits of having a workflow system that has constraints on how much stuff they're doing at one time that isn't exactly tied to a release date.
So for the listener, can we describe a Kanban board for operations? How does that, what does it look like? Is it a whiteboard?
Yes and yes. It can be a physical board. It can be a digital board, but it's visual where the flow of the work itself is represented as it goes through the different states. So for example, if you have an operations team that's doing a variety of different kinds of work, maybe they're supporting development with new features from business requests. And on top of that, they're also building out a new data center.
Right.
And on top of that, they're also doing maintenance work, keeping the lights on, if you will.
So are these different rows of data or sort of project-based lists?
More like what we call work item types.
Okay.
So not all work is the same. Mm-hmm. One of the features of Kanban, we have different kinds of work, and depending on what kind of work it has, it may have a different priority or a different cost or a different level of risk. And so we're trying to bring visibility to that kind of thing. You know, how do I know if I should be working on this thing or the other thing? What kind of risk does this, you know, we handle production is down kind of work is handled very differently.
Sure.
Than let's add blue to this feature screen. And so we can see the different kinds of work on the board. We can see what state the work is in. So people don't have to ask you or bother you or interrupt you with, how's that thing coming along?
Right.
Because they can see that on the Kanban board. We can see who it's assigned to. So that makes our stand-ups different then. Instead of going around the room where everybody has to say what they're working on today and what they did yesterday and what they're going to do tomorrow, so that's all obvious,
right?
Because you can just see that on the board. And so it shifts the stand-up to be more of a what's blocking you,
right?
What's preventing you from getting this thing done, and how can we help you with that? It's a subtle shift. It takes the focus off of the individual and puts it on the work.
Yeah, I do like having a screen or a board with facts on it that we can then debate rather than people arguing over whether you've described something adequately.
Exactly.
It sort of externalizes the problem.
Exactly. Facts form the foundation of belief.
Mm.
Facts can influence people in decisions. And there's a saying about, if we have data, let's look at the data.
Right.
But if we're just going on opinion, then let's go with mine.
But I also like, I physically feels like we're on the same side of a problem for standing together looking at a board or a screen.
Absolutely.
As opposed to sitting across a table.
Absolutely. If we're looking at the data, if we're looking at the board, mm-hmm. we're both on the same side. And it's the data, it's the work that we're trying to improve, trying to fix, instead of just going back and forth arguing with each other.
Now, my experience with Kanban has been on the dev side, where we've written up a feature and it's gone into sort of ideation and then moved over to initial coding, and then it's in QA. And you can see this post-it note or tag, you know, block moving from section to section across the board, so you can see some progress. Do you see work items like that in operations as well? I mean, I don't know how you would granularize the progress of a data center improvement or much less an outage.
Yes, we see work items, and often we'll see workflow across different boards
mm-hmm.
between development and ops. Or if we have product driven teams where there may be an ops team that it's a shared service, and so they'll go work with a product team, not necessarily a project team.
Right.
And so their work gets added to the board too. And then we have visibility of all the work that the shared services team is doing, that they have a lot more work than just supporting business requests or new features. And so those work items will flow across the board. And board designs vary. They're not all the same. It really depends on, you know, the team designs their board. They have the autonomy. They should have the autonomy to design their own board. And so work that needs to be done to build out a data center, it might be in a different horizontal swim lane,
mm-hmm.
but it's broken down into small bits because we like to see work flowing. If something's too big and it stays in one state for too long, that's a problem. We want to see the work flowing. So it should be broken down into small bits. Sometimes emergency work may not go on the board right when it's happening.
Sure.
It might come on the board after the fact. It is one of the problems that unplanned work doesn't tend to get a lot of visibility. And it's a big problem because it's hard to manage unplanned work.
Yes.
And if you have a lot of unplanned work, which we do see in operations teams because they're fighting fires and dealing with last minute requests, if that unplanned work isn't made visible, if it's not being tracked, then down the road, when people are wondering, why did this other thing take so long? Why is this feature taking so long? It's hard to show and remember actually what was happening 2 and 3 weeks ago.
Sure.
When you had these outages. You know, the boss wants to know why the Azure platform isn't up and running yet in production. And if you don't have visibility on that work, you say, well, you know, we've been really busy. There's been a lot of issues lately.
Right.
It can be a problem.
Well, and if you're not documenting, I ran into an organization where they didn't have a real clean help desk flow. Like they weren't making sure that everybody went down the same pipeline. There were certain people they simply called. And it's hard to talk a VP out of calling his favorite IT person. And I gave that guy just a stack of post-it notes. And like, every time you take a call, write it down. And at the end of the day, stick them on the board. And the guy did 40 calls a day.
That's a common problem. And VPs, they don't recognize the distractions sure. that they're inserting when they're doing that, what happens is they're actually adding unpredictability into the workflow system.
I'm really excited about building a mechanism that makes that interruption visible, that makes it cost something.
We did that with one organization. There were two project managers that were protecting the operations team from distractions and interruptions. Mm-hmm. So all the work funneled through the project managers, so much so that the project managers didn't have time to get statuses updated on their wiki pages. And because of that, product managers were doing the drive-bys past their desk.
Right.
And hitting them up on Yammer and Slack, you know, where's this thing? I need to know what's the status. And so for the first week, we just did this as an experiment. They logged 92 interruptions in 1 week.
Wow.
That this team was dealing with. And that was the main reason that they were struggling getting their own work done, was because of just the sheer massive amount of interruptions. And so that experiment helped us design a Kanban flow system for them so that they could easily make their work visible, and others, the product owners, could then go view that work. And the additional benefit was that they could see how work was prioritized. Now, if you're doing 33 projects right. at one time, we tend to think that our project is the highest priority.
Of course.
And we don't know what the other work is that the team is also dealing with. And so when you can see all that work on a higher level board, and what happened here is people would see the board, they would see the way the work was prioritized, they would see that Project X was ahead of their project, and looking at some of the details about the project, they could understand why.
Sure.
Most people are pretty reasonable
yeah.
when they have a lot more information than they normally would. They can understand why, if you're a project that's building pacemakers or something,
right.
why that affix to some of that code is more important than the work that they're doing that needs some kind of maintenance work or,
yeah.
or some kind of change to a logo that marketing's doing that needs to get put out.
And it just seems so simple. I don't know why you haven't got it done yet. You know, I see those kinds of traps happen all the time.
Yeah, I could do that in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
We can always do somebody else's work much faster.
Oh, absolutely. No, I love I got a kid who lives down the street. He could do that in Axis in a day. You know, it's terrible stuff. But I also think it's a way to present, this is how overwhelmed IT is. Like, I think we really struggle to go get better budget. And as IT, I don't know that we're good at that. But if you've got people whose projects are being delayed because IT is that backlog, they'll be your advocate.
Yep, yep. One of the biggest things that I see lately is, actually, it's been a problem for a long time, I think. And that is that teams are just mutually unaware of critical information. They're unaware of the dependencies. Teams get broken down into small teams
mm-hmm.
because a small cohesive team can work faster and better than great big large teams. It's hard to get 20 people to all agree on something. It's much easier to get a smaller group of people to come to some consensus about the way that some work should be done or architected in some way. And so organizations get broken down into these really small teams. But then due to the architecture, there's many dependencies between the teams. And hence the problem with the silos. When teams are on their merry way making changes to the code base and they don't have visibility on the impact that their change is making to another team, then what I call thief unknown dependency raises its ugly head. Every dependency increases the probability of things being late.
Sure.
And so bringing visibility to the dependencies across different teams is what I think one of the most fundamental improvements that teams can take.
Yeah, and challenging to do, because like I said, you want to be able to move fast, so you keep the team small. I'm just worried that you're able to move fast because you don't know what direction you're going in, you know, that you're not necessarily working on the right thing, especially when we've got a lot of projects on the go. It seems like that's a necessary overhead. The only thing worse than not moving fast is moving fast in the wrong direction.
Yeah, that stems from a problem with prioritization. if people are unclear on what the highest priority is, they'll take on too much work in progress. They'll take on too much work, which stems from we need to do a lot of things right now. We don't have time to waste. And the misunderstanding that if we work on fewer things at one time, we'll actually get work done faster. The flow will be faster because there'll be fewer dependencies. The more dependencies we have, the more coordination needs there will be. Coordination needs are high when people aren't available when you need them to be.
Right.
And when people are working on a lot of things at one time, then they're not available.
Yeah.
Especially if they have a specialized skill set. When demand is high for that skill set, that Brent in the Phoenix project, he's not going to be available for other teams or projects that need his services. So when it comes to dependencies, individual team conformance can increase to the detriment of the whole system. Instead of somebody taking on new work, if we're just focused on the individual and they take on, you know, they got to be busy, everybody's got to be busy, so they need to pull the card into their doing queue. If we're just focusing on that instead of looking at the big picture, here's where we get into trouble. It could be that the very most important thing for John to do is to go help Joe finish his work.
Absolutely.
Because the work that Joe is working on has a higher priority. It has a larger risk, has a bigger cost than the new work that John was going to start. But if people are worried about how they're going to be perceived, how they're contributing, what their merit review goals are, and they just keep pulling their own work, then it's at the detriment to the larger organization.
I totally agree. Dominic, can we give you one moment here to pay the bills? This episode of Run As is brought to you by SQL Intersection. 8 full-day workshops and over 40 technology-focused sessions make SQL Intersection a unique source of the best information around SQL Server from real-world consultants and members of the SQL Server team. You'll learn proven problem-solving techniques and technologies you can implement immediately, as well as learn about the future of SQL Server. Get answers to performance monitoring, troubleshooting, designing for scale and performance, cloud, as well as new features in SQL Server 2016 and 2017. It's time to determine your migration strategy, and SQL Intersection is the place to figure out the best way to do it. Come to SQL Intersection at the Swan Hotel in Orlando, March 25th to 28th. Use code RUNAS to get your discount on your registration at sqlintersection.com, and we'll see you there. And we're back talking to Dominica de Grandis about making work visible. And I think you hit on, just before the break, one of the most challenging things where the right thing to do is not always the next thing, but going back through what's being held up and figuring out how you can accelerate it. Because there's also that sort of mythical man month effect that you can't just keep piling people onto a given project and expect it to go faster.
Absolutely. But we still see it all the time, partly because that's a very acceptable thing to do in manufacturing because work goes through the same workstations
right
all the time. But in knowledge work, that doesn't work. We have many more unknowns. We have more variability. We have more dependencies. So things could shift. Adding people makes projects later. We just had this conversation on Twitter with a number of people, so we're not alone there.
Oh yeah, no, it is interesting to do that balancing act back and forth and to figure out why something's really stuck too.
I call that neglected work, work that sits in the system and doesn't get the love it needs. It doesn't get the budget, doesn't get the resources, but people feel like it has a sunk cost to it. So they're unwilling to push it back up into the backlog.
Right.
So it just sits there alone, unhappy, not getting the attention it deserves, but yet it still consumes space in people's heads. Like, oh.
Right.
It's why you're not supposed to have broken appliances around. Why you need to fix your appliances.
Right.
Because they consume your space. Ah, I got to fix that toaster. I got to fix that microwave. Or it consumes people's headspace. And if you just get rid of that, or at least push it back up into the backlog, then people can truly focus with finishing the work that's on their plate now.
Yeah, I totally agree. I also really like your comment and this sort of reflex that after you finish something, before you start something else, comb the backlog. Who can you help? That to me also seems very team behavior too, that it's not just about individual performance of how many items can you knock out, but how can you help everyone get their items done?
Yeah, but be careful, not the backlog, because the backlog is work that ideally, well, let me define that. I consider the backlog as your wish list.
Right.
We may never get to those, some of those things on the backlog. They're probably not prioritized, and they're probably, the team doesn't even have capacity to do that.
Sure.
So what I would recommend is focusing on the work that is in progress right now.
Yeah.
What work does the team have that needs to be done as quickly as possible, and go help somebody finish getting that work from 90% to 100% done.
But it's got to be a challenging assessment to say, can I actually make that move faster, or will bringing me up to speed take longer than just leaving you alone?
Sure. Fair point. Absolutely.
I think it's an interesting dance. But it's also, again, a very positive team thing as somebody to go around your team and say, can I help you? Does it make sense?
Especially at a stand-up when somebody has raised an issue that they're blocked
right
on something. And this is why we see T-shaped skills,
yeah,
of the importance of cross-training mm-hmm. people. Because if you're the only person on the team that can do something, then that's going to increase the risk and increases the variability into the system. Because life happens.
Sure.
And you need to go to the doctor, or the car's in the shop,
yeah,
or you lose a node and you got to go troubleshoot that. And now this priority one work that you were doing sits on hold,
yeah,
if nobody else has that skill set. In fact, that can be the criteria for what's the threshold for putting work on your Kanban board in the first place.
Mm, interesting.
You get that question all the time.
Right.
What's too small that we shouldn't bother putting that work on the board? In other words, what's the cost of actually creating that ticket and managing it through the system? Is that cost higher than just getting the work done? And a lot of times we'll see people say, well, you know, if it's less than an hour or less than 30 minutes, then we're not even going to put that work on the board. But usually there's some exceptions to that rule.
Yeah, because I would think if that just means I got to make sure everything I hand you is 30 minutes and you never look like you did any work.
That's true. And that's one of the exceptions.
Right.
It could be that that's somebody's main job all day long, is they handle a lot of small but important tasks.
Sure.
And if they're not tracked, then all their work is invisible.
I also wonder how much automation we could put in place to just allow when you finish. I think a help desk system would feed a Kanban board just fine, at least for stuff that fits into the help desk need.
Yeah, yeah. Another exception we'll see to that rule is if there's a dependency, because
mm-hmm.
that introduces risk. It's all about showing the risk. Or if nobody else, only one person knows how to do that one thing.
Right.
That it should go on the board because it signals that we need to cross-train other team members.
Yeah. It has the highest risk of being a blocker.
Yeah.
Because it comes down to a single resource, and that person going to lunch means that item stop. So yeah, I do like the idea that unique skills, special items, those sorts of things need to show up on the board. But I don't know. I'd resist not putting anything on the board, even if it only shows up the board done. This, just to see the total amount of work that ops does in a given day. Because so much of it is so invisible. We look like ducks. We're paddling like mad below, but pretty calm on top because everything's working.
Yeah, that's a sign of a pretty mature team
mm-hmm.
to be able to show all the work that they're doing.
Right.
And if teams are just starting out or they're treading water, they're just trying to keep their head above water, we need to find a way to help them get started and to do gradual change. It might be too much to ask a team who's going from point A to point B to put every single thing that they do
sure.
on the board. And so when I'm coaching teams, depending on their context, depending on where they're at, you know, a slice of something small is a way to get started.
Sure. Yeah.
And so to have them figure out what work do they want to get started with making visible is a valid exercise. And especially if they have a physical board, some teams prefer physical boards. You know, they've got their wall up. Maybe they've right. got a electronic backend tool too.
Mm-hmm.
But for a physical board, it would be overwhelming in some cases for them to put up every single item that they're working on.
Sure.
So they'll decide what's the most important thing to bring visibility to. There's one team I was working with. They had a back-end tool that had most of their work in it, but they had a nice wall space kind of in the hallway where the entire department, development team, engineering, operations, help desk, security, monitoring, you name it, they had to walk past this wall to get to the coffee.
Nice.
And because it's physical board, there's something about a physical board.
Yeah.
It's like it's living, and people would stop and look at it and see what was going on versus bringing up that board in there. In their tool.
Yeah.
So it got a lot of attention, and they had great success in putting work up there that they wanted people to pay attention to. They wanted to show the conflicting priorities.
Right.
They wanted to show the dependencies that were impacting other teams. So they had quite a lot of success. If you want visibility on something, put it on the way to the coffee.
Yeah, put it in the main hallway where everybody's going to move and see.
Mm-hmm.
That's got a lot of power.
Yeah, but for them, they also need an electronic tool to capture this.
Right.
Because if you're trying to show your metrics, you're trying to show your good metrics, your lead time, your throughput, your amount of work you have in progress at any one time, the things that are going to help the team make decisions that you're going to show at your retrospectives or your operations review, then capturing that data automatically, the facts, show me the facts on this data, is extremely beneficial. And that's very hard to do with a physical board. Although I have seen people do that. They'll get a stamp, you know, the rubber stamp.
Right.
And you can shift the date on the stamp, and every time something would move or close, you know, you'd stamp the date on it so you could track that. That's hard work though.
Yeah, that's a lot of labor to maintain the board. I'm balancing between the idea that our tendency, because it's our jobs, is to want to automate that. At the same time, once we get it under control, once we have a better understanding of it, there's not a lot of need for automation because it'll be more manageable. It's only at that initial point where we're the least skilled at it and there's the most going on.
That initial design is probably going to change.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to take a while for it to stabilize. And then the board design does evolve and grow. We're constantly changing our board designs, but not as much as in the beginning. That first setup, true, is hard. It kind of depends on what tool you're using, too.
Sure.
Some tools, you know, you have to have a full-time admin. And if you can change the design of the board yourself, if the team has autonomy to do that, that's great. And we'll see a lot of gradual improvement over time with their board design. If it's hard to change the board design, you have to go get an admin to do that, and it takes a long time, then we don't improve our board designs as much as we could. I think it slows down progress. Where a physical board, there are zero constraints. You can do whatever you want.
Sure.
And change it whenever.
You can't argue with the resolution of a physical board.
Well, you can try, but here's where data comes in.
Well, I remember on a big whiteboard that we initially wrote on it, and then we went to Post-it notes, and the fact that we could stack Post-it notes on top of each other.
Yes.
You know, just that densification, because it also gave a visual impact when you realize, wow, you know, all these calls being serviced by these two guys are piles of Post-it notes day after day.
That's so powerful. The same thing holds true for work that's done. Because
mm-hmm.
on an electronic system, you got to scroll.
Right.
Just get down to the bottom to see them all. When we had a physical board, we used to put all the work that was done at the end of the week kind of down on the next corner of the wall.
Right.
And so you could see the massive amount of Post-its.
Yeah.
That had been completed over the last couple of months. And the team took extreme pleasure in seeing that.
Yeah.
When we move something to done, there's joy in that.
It's a hormonal reaction. Yeah.
Yes.
It's very real.
And when we can see a whole wall of done things physically on the wall, there's a lot of satisfaction in that.
It's very powerful.
And then when you're bringing the VP through,
yeah,
you can show them all the work that was completed easily.
Well, our work is so intangible. You can only arrange electrons for so long. To actually make it tangible through, you know, bless 3M and the bloody Post-it note. because it's just such an effective tool for this particular problem. And I'm sure many others too, but it's very interesting to create that physicality. I really appreciate your insights, Dominika. Thank you so much for spending some time with us. And the book is Making Work Visible. I'll make sure to include links to it in the show notes.
Thank you.
And where can we find you if folks want to see you in action?
Well, my website, I have all my talks posted on the website, lots of videos up there at ddegrandis.com. Mm-hmm. On Twitter at Dominika D, fairly active on Twitter. Also on LinkedIn and Instagram. You can always send me an email at dominika@tasktop.com.
Awesome.
Pretty happy with my new role there and helping organizations. Been working with some really large organizations to make their entire value stream network visible. We're working at not just making the work and development and operations visible, but extending that. You know, I think we need to include business in our lead time too.
Yep.
A lot of the lead time is sometimes quite long, not just because of the development and operations work, but we need to invite the business to this party too and start mapping out what that value looks like through the whole network.
Absolutely. Dominika DeGrandis, thank you so much for coming on Run As.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.